We done? We done over here? Awesome. Okay, can I have a representative from each group to share with us about what you may have discussed or come up with?
What was the question? Oh, the question.
Yeah, the question.
Are we going now? Is that what I sound like on a mic? Okay. So are we just talking about what we just talked about, questions-wise? We just talked about, great. Okay, so why does control squash love? We kind of talked about a bit what Mona had just talked about when she had answered the question over here, and just talking about the fact that, I mean, I think someone that is really controlling, if they realize that they are controlling and not willing to change, then they kind of come across as a bit aggressive, like you were talking about, and honestly, that response is, in a way, kind of the opposite of love, is what we were saying, and so just naturally, I think that aggressive type of control would naturally squash love, because, you know, they're kind of knocking heads a bit, you know, it's kind of the opposite response of what we think love should be, especially as Christians. And why do you think some people try to control their spouse? We came up with a few different reasons, but I think one of the reasons we said was, I mean, it is possible that maybe the controlling person doesn't even realize that they're controlling, because no one's ever told them, you know, hey, you're really controlling in situations in your life. And I guess we also just said that, you know, maybe they've been in other situations in their life where they felt like they didn't have a lot of control, and now they're in a situation in a relationship where they're like, I finally have some control, and maybe they just don't know how to responsibly act upon that. So, yeah.
Thank you, Eric. That's awesome, guys.
Okay. So we had a really interesting discussion about why people are trying to control the spouse. So as we agreed with the group one, so squash, control and the love are the opposite side. So if one side starts to control, the other side feels squashed naturally. And we talked about more why people are trying to control, and there's a lot of theories. And I think most of all we agree, it is really about fear. The person starts to fear they lose control, or fear about not to know how to handle the situation. Then naturally the reaction will be, I'm trying to control the other party, be able to feel a bit safe or a bit knowing what's going on. So, and maybe there's other issues as seeing the family members do that all the time. They don't have the skill to know what's the best way to resolve the issue. They just copy the family members and they just do whatever other people are trying to do. So that's what we think, maybe why people want to control other people. And the second question is how to set limits and attend, how to control spouse could set limits on her attempts to control other people. So we came up with theories. We came up with the dog theories, where the dog theories was, I think it's in the training course of the nursing department, where you have a click and you click once, then the dog looked at you, you give the dog a feed, and you click twice, the dog looked at you, give more feed. So next time when you click again, the dog knows there's going to be feed coming up. So we brought this up because we had a real scenario when the husband's late all the time to work. What do you do at the wife? Do you click or you have some other strategy? So we came up with other strategy better than clicking, which is instead of asking him, you know, why are you coming home late, by encouraging him with a positive experience. But when he comes home early, you provide a fantastic meal and a fantastic night. Not sure how we can provide that fantasticness, but we are working on it. I think that the strategy is give the other party knowing if you do right things, it will be fantastic. And hopefully that rings the bell to the person not to do bad things anymore. Yeah?
Wow. So you guys really had your thinking caps on. I heard some of this discussion. It was really interesting. And so it's about rewarding good behavior and not rewarding bad behavior, I think. Okay, that's awesome, guys. And look, it is as I said last week, we are skimming over with this course. It's, you know, as I said, it's normally a course that would run for you know, 8 to 10 weeks, but we've cut it quite short to 4. And so we're skimming over a lot of things. This particular subject is quite huge, and there's so much more to it. But as I said, you know, I'll be looking forward to some feedback, and if you know, you guys are interested in doing more in the subject of relationships, we can offer some other stuff down the track. So and also, please come and see me if you do have questions or you'd like to know more about this particular, or anything actually, anything that we've discussed, because these are really big issues in relationships. Relationships are very, very challenging. They are very challenging. And marriage is extremely challenging. And even the best of relationships have challenges and you know, so the more we have, more understanding we have, the more equipped we are, the more tools we have and the more strategies we have in how to respond to some of these challenges, the easier and the better it's going to be in a relationship, because we want them to work, don't we? You know, we want them to work, whether it on any level, any relationship, whether it's friendship, family. You know, when we get married, we get married because we want to be together and we want it to work. And you know, and it's sad when people give up because they don't have the tools or the know how to navigate through some of these challenges, and they do come, you know, they do come. And as I said, you know, I'm talking just standard here. I'm not talking extreme. You know, some relationships, you know, have got more than challenges, and their challenges go beyond. You know what I mean? Some relationships are just not safe, but you know, we're talking general relationships, and so that's kind of the area that we're staying in predominantly. So, yeah. So on that note, we're going to take a 10-minute break and just have some tea or coffee. Really keep it to 10 minutes max, because we need to come back and get back into it. So please, guys, go out, grab something, and we'll be back here at 5 past. And this, we're jumping to another topic, and this is about avoiding the unforgivable relationship sin. What do you reckon that might be? Oh, you've got the notes. Okay, let's watch it.
About our mortgage payment.
That bank can never get anything right. I'll call first thing in the morning.
I got another past due notice about the car in the mail today.
Honey, that has to be a mistake.
I thought you said the car was paid off.
Don't worry about it. Check into it tomorrow.
I got a call from the bank about our mortgage payment.
That bank can never get anything right. I'll call first thing in the morning.
Are things going okay at work?
Things are fine. It's been a little slow, but next month is really looking good.
I thought you said that we were finally on solid financial ground.
We are. Just trust me, okay?
You just need to know the truth.
Why would I lie to
you? I can handle it, Richard. Just tell me what's going on. I just need
to
know the truth. Truth.
Hello. Oh, look at that. Wow, what do you think was happening there? Two people were talking. Two people had an agenda. Were they kind of connecting? So one was trying to draw out of the other one, and the other one was being quite protective and defensive. And so it seemed like there was some element there of perhaps not the whole truth was coming out. So, here we are. Okay, so deception damages a relationship. So there was some sort of deception going on there. Because he's saying, I'm onto it, and she's saying the bank's calling, all this sort of stuff, we're getting behind. He's like, nah, silly bank, I'm onto it. So she smells a rat, and she says, what's going on? So deception is the unforgivable relationship sin. Now that's really intense saying it's unforgivable, but I mean, everything's forgivable. But I think in terms of some of the most damaging things we can do to a relationship. And the more damage we do, the more work it takes to bring it back. So the act of lying is much more damaging than the things being lied about. Because lying undermines the knowing of one another and the connection itself. So would you guys agree with that? Sometimes it's not the actual issue, but it's the hurt and the devastation that can come from knowing that your friend or your partner or your spouse is lying to you and being dishonest to you. Anything large or small is forgivable and able to be worked through in a relationship, except deception. Deception is the one thing that cannot be worked through because it denies the problem. It is the one unforgivable sin of a relationship because it makes forgiveness unattainable. Of course, if it is confessed, deception is forgivable, but no problem can be worked through if it is denied. So unless we are to take responsibility and own the fact that we're not being completely honest, then the relationship's pretty much doomed. Trust is lost. There's just a lack of trust in the spouse and a lack of trust in the relationship. We believe in total honesty, but honesty must go along with the other values as well. Love, commitment to one spouse, commitment to holiness, forgiveness, we have discussed. So we discussed commitment in our first session. So if there are barriers to honesty, knowing one another intimately is ruled out and falsehood takes over. Can you see how it interferes with the intimacy and interferes with the relationship and the way the relationship is meant to work? Couples often live out years of falsehood trying to protect and save a relationship, all the while destroying any chance of a real relationship. So this is where it's really important in a relationship to have really good communication. And often communication is like this magic word. because it can be one of the most difficult things to actually be able to communicate in a way where it's constructive. It's easy to communicate in a destructive way. It's really easy because, you know, we get emotional, we get fired up and we start, you know, pointing at each other. But communicating in a constructive way and in an honest and a transparent way is a lot more difficult and it's a lot harder. And I can tell you now, guys, without transparency and openness in a relationship, stuff collects and it collects and it builds up and it builds up. And the more it collects and builds up, the more the pressure builds and builds and builds. And the more damage it does to relationships. So, you know, the longer it goes on for, the harder it is to come back from it. It's not impossible, but it takes a lot more work because so much trust is lost, so much security is lost in a relationship. So to communicate honestly and with transparency is really important. And sometimes people just don't know how to do that. You know, they want to, but they don't know how to do it. And it's so easy in a relationship because there's so much emotion for it to just go explode. There's a theory, going back to psychology, called internal family systems. Has anyone heard of that? Internal family systems, it sounds like a family system, but it's actually talking about the members of the internal family that we have within ourselves. So let me explain. The theory goes that we have parts, we're made up of parts. So there are parts of us that have been hurt in childhood or over the years, and they're called, those parts are called exiles. And then there are parts which are known as managers, and the role of the managers is to push forward regardless of those exiles, so regardless of insecurity, regardless of fear, regardless of lack of self-worth, lack of, you know, self-value, whatever it might be. And then we have our parts that are firefighters. And the firefighters, they step into play when the exiles get triggered. Is this all right? Is this a bit too... There's a point why I'm saying all this. And that is when two people come together, they come together with their parts. And their parts are made up of, you know, whatever they've been told in their child or whatever experiences they've had. And so often in a marriage relationship particularly, one partner might say something to the other partner and all of a sudden it triggers something that they may have experienced in their childhood. So either the manager or the firefighter steps in. And so often couples, what they're dealing with is they think they're kind of dealing in the moment, but they're actually dealing with past hurts. Baggage, it's often known as baggage. So the reason I mention that is it can be incredibly complicated in a relationship. And sometimes you get responses from each other and you think, whoa, what was that? That was a bit of an overreaction. And it's because there's so much more responding to you than what you're actually seeing, if that makes sense. And this is why communication is really, really important. To be able to sit down and go, well, what happened there? You know, that you really kind of, oh, well, you know, when I was a kid, you know, my dad used to always tell me that I could never do anything right. And so when you tell me that, you know, when you challenge me about the way I'm doing the banking or looking after our mortgage, I'm hearing my father tell me, you know. We don't always know what these things are, but the more knowledge we have about ourselves and how we function and some of our, you know, exiles or some of our, you know, hurts and core beliefs and all that sort of stuff have a big part to play in who we are. And so when two people come together, that's what they're bringing together. And so painting another picture as to the importance of communication and transparency. Next one, please. Yep. So we can't stress enough the importance of being able to share with each other your deepest feelings, needs, hurts, desires, failures. Sometimes we're afraid to talk about our failures. We're afraid to confront our spouse or friend or whoever it is with the fact that we've actually failed to confess it. And with our needs and vulnerabilities. Most of the time in otherwise good marriages, deception takes place for defensive reasons. In other words, the dishonest spouse is often lying, not for evil reasons, but to protect himself. So that's a little bit about what I'm saying with the parts, the internal family systems. Fears drive the deception. For spouses to tell the whole truth, they must deal with their fears first. Fear of real closeness and being known, fear of abandonment and loss of love Fear of being controlled and possessed if they are known. Fear of being seen as bad or not good enough. And fear of their own desires, needs, and feelings. So sometimes people get scared about the fact that they have these needs and they have these desires. It scares them. And sometimes feelings that we feel can be scary. We don't know what to do with it. Are we supposed to have these feelings? Are we supposed to think like this? So a strong relationship requires a commitment to each other of total honesty. But remember that honesty must be accompanied by enough grace to hear and deal with the truth it brings. So there lies the challenge. Some people are so afraid to face truths that they stay in denial because it's too confronting. But what happens when it just stays buried? You have dishonesty, deception, a fear in the relationship rather than feeling a sense of love and acceptance. All that stuff messes with the dynamics of a relationship. Okay, so we've got a little bit more time for some more discussion. And the part of the focus of this is, which I didn't go into it because I knew we wouldn't have time, it talks about some of our responses to our partners' failures. And some of those things can be we start to go, well, you can't do this, or you're not able to do that, so I'm going to go out and I'm going to find my own way of getting my needs met. Is that cool? We've kind of jumped a little bit. It's still on the same topic, but as I said, I've chopped some stuff out because just can't fit it all in. We're meant to finish by 8:30, so we've got 6 minutes. So do you guys want to have a go at this? Just back into your groups. So it's a little bit about dealing with hurts and about having empathy when your spouse does tell you or your friend does tell you. And talking about why is forgiveness difficult if the person who has made the mistake is not truly repentant. So maybe, how about we do this? Pick one question as a group that you'd like to cover, because we're not going to get to all four of them. Okay. We'll have to stop because we've gone 5 minutes past already. Did you guys want to talk about what you... I think we should, just really, really quickly. If someone can represent again, tell us which question you picked and what you discussed, just really briefly. Oh, you're so... everyone's shy. Come on, guys. Come on, Deanna. Deanna.
Okay, we went with number two. So how can dealing with your own pain and hurt make you more have more empathy for your spouse? And we're just saying that if you are able to like focus on your own pain, like your pain and hurt, and figure out like why and how and how to overcome that, then you can have empathy for your partner and I guess help them to overcome their like and then come to the root to whatever the problem was in the beginning. Yet again, that communication and like finding out what the deeper meaning is, and not just you did that, how could you, it's over. Like, you need to find out how to deal with it. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you. And over here. Now, these guys picked the same question, but you actually went to the, you had time for a second question. So maybe you guys might like to talk about the other question, which was question three. Is that right? Who's going to speak? Who?
Chris.
Thank you. I'm not very good at talking, I think. But for question three, we talk about that if the spouse is has make a mistake, and if not realize that, then probably the mistake will happen again and again, and that's what stop the that makes the forgiveness probably like less meaningful, because the purpose of the forgive is try to move on, and yeah, if it happens again, then yeah, probably it's the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. That's our answers, right?
Thanks, Chris. That's great. Yeah, it's you know, when there's no true kind of repentance, or, you know, kind of shows there's not a lot of remorse, which kind of doesn't show a lot of empathy, you know, for the possible hurt and pain they cause the other person, which puts a bit of a question around, do they really care, and what's to stop them doing it again? Yeah, that's good. Alrighty, well, we'll stop there. It's 8:39, sorry, gone a bit over. So we've got one more session to go, well, the last one, and I really encourage you guys to be at that one. That one's going to cover the topic of conflict and conflict resolution, which is a big one. And I mean, they're all pretty big, but so I encourage you to come along and don't miss it. And as I said, it's the last one. And then beyond that, please come and see me if you want any more information, any questions. If you're interested in doing Prepare and Reach, or in any of the other topics that we've covered, come and see me. Cool? Awesome. You guys are great. I'm going to let you go. Thank you. And thank you to you. And...